today, gun crimping. What is it? Does it hurt? Is it the answer to the nation's gun crisis? Far too many uses of the word crimping coming up on today's show, along with the latest on Russia's dancing president, that rascally Liam Gallagher, and the newest big screen debacle from the Martin Molloy Film Corporation. As always, we'll play Beat the Beasley and Radio Gladiators, and joining us live once again, the nation's foremost authority on the backyard shed, author Mark Thompson, who's giving you the chance to contribute to his next read. Yes, it's all coming up on the program that gets Boris Yeltsin doing the Lambada, Martin Molloy. Always be my baby. That's Mariah Carey here at Martin Molloy for a Tuesday right around Australia with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man who continues to deny he's engaged to Liza Minnelli, Mick Molloy.
Just another one for the rumour file, Tone.
We're going to be opening the rumour file and asking the listeners to contribute later in the show, but
not saying a word.
All right, sit there,
but
mister.
She does have fantastic fashion sense.
Liza Molloy.
That's all I can say.
It rolls off the tongue anyway. But, Mick, I want to start off today's program by talking about gun crimping.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about gun crimping?
Yes, I have.
It's the latest idea to try and achieve some kind of compromise between gun owners and the Howard government. Basically, if the idea checks out, you shooters will be able to hang on to your semi-automatics, but you'll have to get them crimped by an authorised gun crimper.
Mm.
Now, what does this mean? They get the barrel of the gun and take to it with a big pair of pliers, tighten a knot so as if you try and fire it, it turns red and blows up like a balloon. Yosemite Sam style? No, not quite. Gun crimping involves the shortening of magazines to make your semi-automatic equivalent to your double-barreled shotgun. So you get your semi-automatic, bad gun. You take it down to Mr. Minute for a quick crimping, and suddenly it's a double-barreled shotty. Good gun. Now, the PM is refusing to commit to the crimping concept until someone can prove to him that it's irreversible, i.e. that you can't change your mind and have your piece decrimped on the sly. Mm-hmm. Basically, John Howard's asking, is it like a vasectomy? Once the tubes are tied, is there any going back? In effect, he's asking people to get their guns spayed. Shooters, they'll be asking each other, have you had your gun spayed, mate? Have you had it done yet? Oh, yeah, and it's not been the same since. It just sits around in the backyard feeling sorry for itself. Because that's a question nobody's asking.
Yeah.
What about the psychological effects of crimping? Will the process engender feelings of inadequacy amongst shooters? A sense that they can no longer perform up to expectations? Hey, Barry, you coming out in the ute this vote to, you know, blast a few rabbits? No, mate, I've got a headache. I'm going to turn in early. I'm under a lot of pressure at work. Don't worry. It's not you, it's me. Hang on a second, Barry. You haven't had the barrel tied. Yeah, mate, I've gone the crimp. You guys go without me. Me and the missus are just going to finish our cappuccinos and we're straight off to see how to make an American quilt. And while we're talking shooters, Mickey, did you watch Dickie Carlton's gun debate on 60 Minutes?
Got it on tape.
Oh, yeah. Did you get the feeling like me that it was meant to be the whole hour, but by the time they'd taken to it with the scissors, by the time they'd finished crimping, they only had enough for 20 minutes? Anyway, how's the way blokes kept standing up and saying the reason we should have guns is that any day now one of our northern neighbours is going to try and invade? Okay, just for a moment, let's assume that that's true, that that's the case.
Mm.
Who's going to defend us exactly? A whole lot of fat blokes living in northern Queensland with illegal semis hidden under the beds, Bob Catter style, are going to form themselves into some kind of redneck A-team and save the day. Why do I get the feeling that in certain parts of the country we've already introduced brain crimping? That's Brian Adams, summer of 69, here at Martin Molloy, your gun crimping connection.
Mm.
And Mickey, what else is going on in the world?
Well, Tone, there is yet another health cloud over Russian President Boris Yeltsin.
Oh,
have you been keeping up with this?
Yeah.
Yesterday he made his first appearance in 4 days as he appealed to Russians to vote for him in tomorrow's runoff election against communist Gennady Zyuganov.
Right.
And I'm not saying he wasn't well, but we'll put it this way. There wasn't any dancing.
Wasn't there?
No, which has become a bit of a trademark of Boris's on the election trail.
Mm.
No political rally in Russia is complete till Boris gets up and does a quick batusi or a bit of the old mashed potato. In Russia, If you're running for president, you can't afford to be a wallflower,
That's the rule.
Did you see his press conference? I've never seen him so subdued. He was sitting there behind a desk, just rigid, unmoving. Mm. It looked like one of those fairground cutouts of a bloke in a suit with Boris's noggin stuck through the hole where the head should be. At tomorrow's press conference, it could be Boris's head on the paddle pop line's body. Who knows? But it was quite eerie. It was weird. It was like some kind of Boris Yeltsin painting where the eyes just followed you around the room a bit. And the voice, very, very hoarse, hardly recognisable as his. At one stage, there was a bloke standing behind him, and I'm not saying I was sceptical, but I was waiting to see if he was going to drink a glass of water while Boris was actually talking. Boris's opponent, Mr. Zhiganov, insisted Boris was in bad shape, and when asked why Russians should vote for him, he just got up out of the chair and broke into a quick tap routine. Dancing seems to be the key to Russian elections, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm actually finding it hard to distinguish between Russian elections and a pot of gold final. If Boris could play a tune on a gum leaf or get a dog in a tutu to jump through a hoop, I'm sure he'd have it in the bag. Come on, Boris. Only one day to go. You know the rules. This is for the presidency. It's bop till you drop. His advisors should have him up all night, Tone, teaching him the time warp or squeezing him into some hot pants for a bit of wake me up before you go-go style puncing about. Because that's what the Russians are looking for in a leader. Have you seen his re-election ad, Tone? It's a beauty.
No, describe it to us.
Well, have you seen Pulp Fiction?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a bit of this. With Uma Thurman and Boris Yeltsin going like the clappers. Like this, Tone. Can you see?
Yeah.
Get your legs going.
Oh, that's it.
Give it a go yourself.
You could be the next president of Russia.
Come on, soldier. Get up and give it a go.
Sexual healing, that's Maximilian here at Martin Malloy.
From the producers of Twister comes the latest action blockbuster dealing with inclement weather conditions. Batten down the hatches and prepare to be caught up in a stiff breeze.
Hey, I'm going down the shops. You want anything?
Oh, I wouldn't go out there right now.
Why not?
There's a bit of a stiff breeze.
Really?
Yep. Have a look at the washing on the clothesline.
Cripes, you're right. I might leave it half an hour. Well, that washing will be dry in no time.
When a stiff breeze comes to town, ladies wearing skirts had better watch out. Or when they're walking down the street, other people might get a glimpse of their bottom. And it's no picnic for the gents either.
Jeez, that breeze has picked up.
You're not wrong.
Greg, look out! Your hat!
What the...
Oh, my hat! Quick, chase it!
It's gone, mate! It's gone!
My hat!
Damn this stiff breeze! Damn it to hell!
The forecast said cloudy in the morning, clearing to sunny and fine in the afternoon. But it never said anything about a gentle breeze that just didn't know when to stop getting fresher.
Hey, mate, you got a light?
Yep, sure.
What's the problem?
It's the damn breeze! I can't light it! It won't light!
Yeah, I'll cut my hands!
It's not gonna light, I tell you! It's not gonna light!
Unless you've got a pretty reliable Parker, you won't want to be caught in the eye of a stiff breeze. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Hey, buddy, just wait a second while I take a whiz on this tree.
Yeah, you sure that's wise? There's a bit of a breeze about.
Shouldn't be a problem. Dave, hurry up. It's picking up.
Yeah, I'll be done in a...
Oh, God! Oh, Jesus!
Oh, Dave, you're into the wind! You're into the wind!
Get it off me! Get it off me!
It's got quite a few shoops in it, so I'm suggesting it's the shoop song Exhale from Whitney Houston right here at Martin Malloy. And in the next hour, Mark Thompson is making a return visit. Adelaide author Mark Thompson, I'm not sure if you're familiar with his name, but you might have seen his terrific little book, Blokes and Sheds, out in the shops.
A tomb.
We're always talking sheds on the show, probably too much, but we're going to put it to bed today by having another yak to Mark, who's working on a second book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's giving you, the public, a chance to contribute. It's a fantastic idea. It's a fantastic deal. He'll give us the details in the next hour. Also, Radio Gladiators is coming up, and we'll also be playing Beat the Beasley. How'd that go yesterday, Mickey?
Very good, except you stole half my questions.
Oh, did
you? Question hog!
I was a question hog, and as a result, I'll probably be replaced by Tony Barber. And
you'll be showing the door. You only get one chance on Beat the Beasley.
What did we do? We dropped a whole lot of irregular golf balls under Greg Norman's head.
for what was the reason we did that for?
Oh, just out of spite, I think.
Just for something to do.
Funny, though, we had a lot of calls afterwards saying that every day we should drop the Beasley onto Greg Norman's head. The idea's got a lot of support out there. But that'll be in the next hour, and right now, yes, we've got time for another episode of Tony Martin's Rock Connection. Long enough for me to get the acid wash jeans on, but here I am. And listen to this, Mickey. Simply Red singer Mick Hucknall has fallen out with Eric Clapton after sending him a fax suggesting he should give up singing.
Cool.
Yeah, that'd do it.
That'd just about do it.
I think so. But it seems Hucknall's popped down the Albert Hall to see veteran axeman Clapton on the job and not been too impressed. Says Mick, Eric kept saying how tired he was. He seemed so miserable. Isn't that what the blues is all about? Having a good old-fashioned whinge on stage and asking people to pay for the privilege of copping an earful? That's why I like it.
Yep.
And didn't Eric recently lose his daughter in a freak accident and have his house and collection of priceless guitars burnt to the ground? That could well answer the question, why the long-faced clappers? But no, says Hucknall, I found the show quite dull, so I sent him a fax suggesting he should give up singing. I just thought that if he stuck to playing guitar with another singer, he'd enjoy himself more. But after receiving the advice, Clapton was apparently livid and deeply offended. Who would you like to see give up the game, Mickey? The bloke who sang Layla or the bloke who sang Money's Too Tight to Mention? I'll let you be the judge there. But that's very diplomatic of Mick, isn't it? That's fantastic. He'll be calling Christopher Reeve next saying, saw you at the Oscars. I don't know, you seem so much more animated in Superman. But someone else who doesn't mind putting their foot in it is our old buddy Liam Gallagher of Oasis. Now, on Saturday, his girlfriend, actress Patsy Kins, it's taken him to see a fashion show at the elegant home of Milan designer Gianni Versace. So it's a proper full-on fashion show with all the photographers and celebrities. Liam's shown up in a khaki shirt, khaki baggy shorts and desert boots. So he's looking like an extra from an Ain't Half Hot Mum. He's upset everybody by loudly wolf-whistling and cheering all the models on the catwalk, prompting an embarrassed Kensett to repeatedly elbow him and snarl. But finally, he's got bored, decided to leave halfway through, realised the only exit is via the catwalk itself, jumped up and, boots a-clomping, pushed and shoved his way through several models in mid-glide and stumbled out the stage door. Yeah. Kensett, white with rage, didn't follow. Now, I think this is fantastic. This is a fantastic move for Liam because finally Oasis is starting to live up to their title of the world's greatest rock and roll band. I mean, that's a display worthy of Keith Moon. Staggering up a catwalk in the middle of a show, wolf whistling the models in a pair of Eric Morecambe khaki shorts and desert boots. Well done! Hats off!
Nicely.
Except Keith would have gone a bit further. He'd have pantsed Versace himself. Gianni would be staggering up the catwalk, strides round the ankles, two black eyes, and Keith Moon vomit all down the front of his 3,000-buck linen suit. And you know what? The next day, in all your fashion capitals, everyone would be dressed like that.
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by Absolutely Nobody.
Fast Love, that's George Michael, here at Martin Malloy, the proud home of this... Hi to Aussie institutions every week in this country, and nobody seems to be getting out and marching anymore.
No one gives a toss, Tony.
Remember the furore when there was a suggestion we were going to change the flag?
Yep.
Remember that?
Bit of a hoo-ha.
But what happened when KFC got rid of the bucket, replaced it with the sports pack? Nothing. What happened when the Fairstar decided to call it a day?
No one. No one batted an eyelid.
What about when Baby John got asked as host of Wheel of Fortune? Is the people out in the street now marching?
No.
Nothing.
The silent majority.
Now, how is Baby...
time to be to be counted. Trying to stick your hand up and go, I like Baby John.
Yeah.
I'm on Baby John's side.
You spoke to him today. I'm not giving too much away there, Mickey. This isn't some kind of joke. You really did get a call from the baby. How's he taking it?
He's all right. He's coming to terms with it slowly. He's very keen to track down how it all came about, though.
Yeah, he's putting the pieces together.
Well, he'd heard that basically we'd broke the news on
this program.
He rang today and he said, now, look, I'm just ringing to see, is it true I heard you guys break the news on June 4th, which is about the time I heard about it.
Yeah.
Which was true.
Yeah, sure, we did actually read a little story in the Adelaide Advertiser, but we're claiming that, in fact, we broke the news here on Martin Malloy.
Part of the Martin Malloy rumour mill.
Now, that's what we're talking today. I finally got to the subject, have I? It's the rumour mill. We want you to contribute to the Martin Malloy rumour mill, rumour file, whatever we're calling it. We want you to call us up with your outrageous rumours that either you've made up yourself or you've actually heard involving public figures.
Sure.
Public, and keep, you know, be careful. There are lawyers listening to this program, so, you know, keep them in the the realms of the possible at least. And I don't know, I've got a rumour for you. I've heard that Channel 7 are going to try and patch up the rift with Baby John by offering him a job as the newest and most fearsome gladiator, Selangor. Who wears an imposing codpiece fashioned from genuine prize game show pewter.
There you go. There's a bit of piping hot goss off the shelf.
And all I have to do is say it here. And by tomorrow, it'll be in one of them columns. You know, you see in the papers, you know, the Bob Sleazebag column.
Industry reports suggest.
Yeah, exactly.
Our sources say.
That's right. That's right.
You got one. You remember Christo?
Christo, the bloke who wraps up buildings.
He wrapped up the German House of Parliament. I think he did the cliffs in Sydney.
That's right.
I happen to know he made Kieran Kenley's dress for the Logies.
I
don't know for sure. It's a rumour I heard.
Not by himself, surely.
Oh, no, it took a team of about 200.
All right.
2 years.
I've heard a nasty little rumour that next week's issue of TV Week will feature absolutely no photos of Melissa George. It can't be true!
No one's going to bite down on that, Tone.
All right.
You're in the realms of the papers. I heard one of the bananas in pyjamas has fruit fly.
Oh, no.
I can't. I'm not going to say which one. That could get me into legal trouble. But one of them, well, less than 100%.
He's waiting for the test results to come back. What about, I've heard that the next cover of Vanity Fair is just an X-ray of Demi Moore. That's how far she's having to go to get on the mag covers these
days. That's pretty hot goss, Tone, but I think I can trump you. Mm. Have a listen to this.
What do you got?
Something I heard.
What are you sitting on?
Angry Anderson wears a bald cap.
Oh, you're joking.
He actually has a full head of hair.
Is that right?
And he gets out, he's got hair like Brett Whiteley. Until he puts the bald cap on for all his public appearances. That's all I'm saying, people.
I've heard that with the aid of a bit of clever Dick Tracy-style prosthetic makeup, Angry Anderson is in fact that bald bloke on Murder One.
Is that right?
You know how if you look at his head for too long, it doesn't look like a real head anymore? It's kind of something latexy. It's Michael Jackson in there. It's Eddie Murphy coming to America style.
You're waiting for his head to open up. You know, like that woman in Total Recall?
Oh, yeah.
Open up and someone else to appear inside but Angry Anderson's head.
Something's not right with his bonce, with his noggin. But now, these are all, I suppose, believable. Mm. Here's a rumour I've heard that's just too ridiculous to be true, that Fergie is going to start accepting work as a catwalk supermodel.
Oh, come on, Dave.
As if.
Peddle that rubbish somewhere else.
Is that what we're looking for? We're looking for rumours about celebrities, public figures, politicians, movie stars.
Rugrats are suing water rats.
Yeah,
are they really? Apparently the storylines have been very similar of late, the Rugrats team aren't happy.
Okay, but Rugrats are more realistic, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, well, enough of our yakking. Have we got a prize for this idea, Gracie? Yes, Gracie, at the pedals of the Moog today, as I tell you that you will, in fact, for your rumour, if it's the one we enjoy the most, you'll win tickets for you and a friend to see John Farnham live in concert. And how would you like to be pelted with eggs while you're there? It's simple. All you have to do is wear a free Martin Malloy t-shirt along to the gig. Plus, you'll go into the draw when this Friday Pete Smith will select somebody to stay for, listen to this, 7 nights at the new 4-star Port Douglas Treetops. I think I went to school with the Douglas Treetops. I don't know what he's doing these days.
Treetops?
You remember old Dougie Treetops?
Dougie T.
If you're listening, Dougie, give us a call. But you're not staying at his joint. You're staying at the Port Douglas Treetops. You're flying Ansett Airlines for 7 nights. So call us now with your outrageous rumour, bit of gossip, 1-800-657-657. That's Boyzone. I think we know that by now.
With father and son here at Martin Molloy. Unfortunately, Boyzone, not the subject of any rumours. On today's Radio Gladiators, that's what we're talking about. We simply want your showbiz, political, public figure style rumours and gossip, because if they come true, then we'll get the credit like we seem to be getting for baby John Burgess, even though it was an Adelaide newspaper. Do we have any rumour mongers on the line, Mickey?
We certainly do. Delivering the hot poo first up is Jacob. How are you, Jacob?
How you going?
Not too bad, mate. What have you heard around the traps?
I heard that Keanu Reeves come down to Melbourne at the end of the week to go on a series of Neighbours.
What will Keanu be doing on Neighbours? Is his acting of a high enough standard, do you feel?
Oh, I don't know. Not for our Neighbours, I don't think.
He'll be playing one of the houses on Ramsey Street.
It'll be the only house with a mohawk. Have you heard any of these rumours about Keanu hiding out in Byron Bay?
Oh, I sure have, yeah.
You haven't sighted him yourself, though, Jacob?
No, not this week, I haven't.
Okay. Well, he could be heading to Melbourne for Neighbours. Well, I think that's a good one to kick
off. There we go.
Okay.
We're away.
Could well come true and not libelous at all, I don't think. Have we got Tony on the line? Tony?
G'day, guys.
Oh, what do you got for us, Tony?
I reckon on Saturday, I heard on Saturday that Del Summer's going to wear a top with only one colour.
That doesn't sound very likely, Tony. Where did you... Is your source good?
It's very good, trust me. I think it'll be just a plain old beige, just one piece beige top.
Yes. Do you get the feeling that the people who choose the outfits for Daryl are just having a good hard cack when he walks out at the start of the show?
I reckon they're cackling themselves every Saturday night while they're watching him.
What was he wearing on the most recent one?
Daggy black and grey. It was black sleeves and grey collar, and I don't know, it was just like velvet, really daggy, shitty velvet.
I've seen him wearing stuff that looks like the end product of How to Make an American Quilt. That's what they spend the entire movie doing, making a top for Daryl to wear.
Oh, I don't know what he was wearing on Saturday, but I think it was Caprichosa. Okay, thanks, Tony. Now we've got, is it Janine? Are you there, Janine?
I sure am.
What have you got for us in the way of hot poo?
Well, the rumour that I heard was that Greg Matthews was so disappointed in his last hair transplant that he's looking at having a whole head transplant.
A whole head transplant?
Yeah, he's looking at Timothy Leary at the moment.
Of course, because Tim's finished with the head, and so it's probably available. Is that a service they're going to offer? Will we be able to pop down the advanced head studios?
Quite likely.
Get your noggin done.
And just go through the catalogue, look at a few swatches, say, yeah, I'll have maybe a Yeltsin this week. And strand by strand, your friends won't even notice. You'll be Boris in a couple of weeks.
Well, I like it.
Good idea. Thanks, Janine. Nice rumour. We've got Jason on the line now. Jason, I think your rumour involves Boris Yeltsin, doesn't it?
It sure does, guys. How are you going?
Not bad. Tell us about it.
The reason that Boris Yeltsin hasn't been doing any dances lately is because he's actually filming a sequel to Strictly Ballroom, and his choreographers just said no public appearances. Sorry, Barry.
Oh, I see. So
he said sorry, Barry.
Sure did.
That's what he said.
Sorry, Barry. And that's because Barry is sitting on so many hot new moves that if they get out, everyone will be doing them.
Yep, that's right.
You've seen him during the election campaign, haven't you, Boris Yeltsin? He's just got a big number on his back. They're looking for his partner.
Oh, I hope the rumours aren't true that Boris Yeltsin uses a conveyor belt on his stage.
I was very disappointed once at Devo to find that out to be the case.
All right.
But not with Boris.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Now we'll ask Brian to tell us about his outrageous rumour. What is it, Brian?
No, I reckon that the creator of Madonna's cone bra was the creator of John Howard's black jacket for the shooter's
part. Oh, you think so? And I think that was probably somebody along the lines of Jean-Paul Gaultier. So you're suggesting Johnny Howard's been down to the Gaultier office and said, I'm doing a big appearance at the gun rally. What have you got for me?
Yeah, I think that's about it.
The only cone shape item I've ever seen on John Howard is that little hat he wears with the propeller on top. Exactly. That could be made by Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Oh, I think his advisors have told him to stop wearing that in public.
It's
only for the cabinet meetings, Mickey. And wouldn't it have been great if John Howard had come out before all the shooters wearing a cone-shaped bra over his suit? That would have got people talking.
That would have placated them.
Oh, I think so. Nicely done, Brian. Now we've just got time for Jack. You there, Jack?
Yeah, I'm here, boys.
Tell us about your outrageous rumour.
Well, I've heard that in a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, Sydney radio station 2 he's actually bringing up a bit of competition for you boys called Martin Molly with Ray Martin and Molly Meldrum.
Oh, no!
And they're going to give away free T-shirts with a picture of a big pot of shit with a hat on top.
I think shite was the word you were looking for there, Dick.
I see. And what would the entertainment be like on Martin Molly?
Oh, I think it'd be a lot of Pet Shop Boys and John Denver.
I see. And then at the end of the show, just for a laugh, Ray and Molly swap the headpieces. Ray wears the hat and Molly wears the helmet.
That'd be a good look, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a pretty good rumor.
I'm liking it.
All right, we'll pay that one. Thanks, Jack. You're off to see John Farnham live in concert. You're wearing, I'm afraid, a Martin Molloy T-shirt. Not quite as good as the Martin Molly ones. And you've gone into the draw for that trip for two to the fabulous four-star Port Douglas Treetops Flying Ansett. And we're going to be drawing that. That's thanks to Mr. Douglas Treetops himself. And we'll be drawing that this Friday afternoon. So be listening then.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jack. And we'll be back in the next hour with a bloke we've had on before. You might not be familiar with his name, but I'm sure you're familiar with his fantastic book, Blokes and Sheds. It's Mark Thompson.
This is Martin Molloy.
Muscular coordination, perfect. Reflex actions, perfect. Physical structure, perfect.
Brought to you by...
And in this hour of Martin Molloy, another chance to beat the Beasley, another heated gun debate, and next up, we're out in the shed with author Mark Thompson. Beside you, that's Sophie B. Hawkins. It's Martin Molloy. It's the second hour, and let's get our guest in. Well, he's an Adelaide author. He sold over 30,000 copies of the book we think should have bagged last year's Nobel Prize for Literature, Blokes and Sheds. And listen to this. He's out in the shed working on a sequel, and you could be a part of it, listeners. What are we on about? Let's ask him. He's live in our Adelaide studio. It's Mark Thompson. Are you there, Mark?
Yep, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Now, what have you been up to lately? Have you been out the back tinkering?
Yep, I've been working in the chipboard mine, sawing up that wood. We've got a lot of beautiful new shelves at home.
And has your life changed since the book came out? Are you some kind of authority now? Do you find people coming up to your parties going, here's something you can use in the next one?
Yeah, I get a bit of that. I get a lot of sniggering too, but, you know.
Have you had any of the problem a lot of other famous authors have had? Has anyone put a fatwa on your book? Anyone who's anti-shed?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, people have sort of clearly identified me with a sort of fringe lobby group, you know. This sort of, oh, they can take our guns, but they can't take our sheds. You know, that sort of stuff. You know. No, it's the secret brotherhood, you know.
Now, explain to us, for people who might not be familiar with the book or heard you on the show before, explain what the appeal of the shed is. There's a lot of people out there. I know Paul Hester's always coming on the show and describing himself as a shed case. What is the appeal of the shed, and what is it that attracts you to it as a subject?
Well, it's, I guess what I liked was the nature of the disorder, chaos. It was organic, you know, it was meant to be. You know, that's how the world should be ordered. Right.
Yeah, so
you know, just as it happens, you know, there's no great need to, you know, make everything absolutely correct. I like the political incorrectness of the shed, I guess. And it's also about, you know, it's not so much what you do in the shed, it's what you think you can do. You know, you'll get around to it. You know, the potential of a shed is far more interesting and, you know, it's got much more use than what you actually ever do in it.
That's right. The shed is rich with potential, and if you actually start taking the things and doing too much in there, it's not right, is it?
No, you look too useful then.
It should be full of things that are just you're never going to get round to.
A good project.
Right. Now, what do you make of some of the sheds? Have we been spotting sheds in the news lately, Mickey?
Yeah, one that's been making headlines is the Unabomber shed, Mark. Have you seen the abode of Ted Kaczynski?
No, this is a bit of a worry. Tell me about it.
Well, it's a little shack in the middle of nowhere that we call a shed because the dimensions, I think, were, what, about 3 metres by 2 metres?
I think it was 3 metres by 3.5 metres.
That's beautiful. That's under council planning regulations. You can do anything there.
Well, here's what happened. The FBI descended on his shed in Montana and they found this bloke, and inside, it just sounded like a typical shed, but just a little bit more deadly. There were post packs, there were typewriters, there were pipes, there were bits of explosive equipment, and it just was full of jobs that he hadn't quite got round to. It was the ultimate shed.
Is that a legitimate use of a shed?
Yeah, I haven't heard from Ted. I haven't heard from Ted.
Well, you get on the line to the LA State Pen, and I reckon he's page one of the new book. And here's another one. Paul Hester last week was referring to Captain Cook's cottage in Fitzroy Gardens in Melbourne as the king of sheds.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? I think Captain Cook's cottage is the right shed dimension.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got that sort of compact look about it. Yeah.
Mm. Have you heard much in the way of, like, Sheds of the Rich and Famous? I mean, is that a potential anthology for you? Do you know people? Have you heard of anyone who's particularly high-powered who has a shed?
Yeah, well, the number one, you know, Bill Hayden, Governor General. He had a ripper of a shed, apparently. He put up a great big one out the back of Yarralumla out there. I've only heard that. It's a bit... Yeah, you know, sheds are the rich and famous. It's a sort of almost a contradiction, and it really isn't. I mean, it's sort of it's not the sort of egalitarian sort of thing we like about Australia. Who cares what the rich and famous do in their sheds?
I hear you. Yeah. They don't deserve a shed.
That's right.
That's the way I look at it. Shed's too good for them. Yeah, you mentioned planning regulations, and I mean, I know there are legal requirements, but in your own mind, I mean, what kind of building materials are like required for something to be called a shed?
Corrugated iron.
Corrugated iron.
That's where you start.
That's a must.
The true corrugationalist knows where to start worshipping.
Mm. And what are some of the other musts? I think we've talked about this before. You've got to have a dusty old dartboard.
Dartboard, yep, that's a good one. The beer fridge, of course, is absolutely obligatory.
Yes.
And a good bench. You know, where you can sort of take the guts out of a car and put it on a big bench and whack it.
Leave it there for a couple of years before you get round to doing anything about it.
And you've got to have one of them boards which not only has tools hanging on it, but it has silhouettes of what tools go where.
Shadow board. Shadow board.
Is that what it's called? A shadow board? There's a name for that.
Yep.
And, of course, there should only be about three tools going with the corresponding shadows, I find.
Yeah, they've got a misfit.
And in the beer fridge, should there be little shadow outlines of like where the beer can should go?
The stubby holder, yeah.
All right, Mark, I think enough grilling of you. Tell us about what you're working on and what you want from not just our listeners, but indeed the greater Australian public.
Well, the publishers in their wisdom, you know, when they see a good thing, want to flog the life out of it. And, of course, they want to do a follow-up that basically came from a lot of the letters I got after the book came out. And and they want to do a thing called Stories from the Shed.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so it's a... Because some of them are really great little yarns about, you know, things that people did around what happened when the dog died and, you know, and all this sort of thing. And so, but they're willing to pay people if their stories are up to scratch. And we're going to publish about 50 stories, or some of them are poems, right? Mm-hmm. And willing for any stories from anywhere from 100 to 1,000 words.
Have you got any poems yet?
Well, I've got a lot
of
poems.
You got Ode to Shed?
You wouldn't believe how many would-be poets there are out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Tinkering away. But obviously, if it was a poem you'd written in the shed, you'd want to only get a couple of lines in and then just leave it, wouldn't you?
The one with all the beer stains on it would obviously get in quick.
All right, Mark. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to try and help out today. We want our listeners to call us up now and tell us some shed stories that Mark might be able to use in the book. And not necessarily stuff he can use in the book. Just tell him about your shed.
Well, no, we know some gossip on the shed.
It's your chance to basically talk sheds with the nation's leading expert on the subject. So, Mark, can you hang around for another break?
No worries.
Sit tight there and people call us up now. Talk sheds with us. 1-800-657-657. In the middle of a national shed link-up because online from Adelaide we have the author of Blokes and Sheds, Mark Thompson. Mark's working on a sequel provisionally titled Stories from the Shed. Is that right at this stage, Mark?
Yep, that's the idea.
But you might be out in the shed and come up with a better title. Yeah. You're not sure at this stage.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
And you're looking for actual shed stories from the GP, and we've got some people on the line now talking sheds. Who have we got, Mickey?
Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, mate.
How are you, buddy?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Now, give us a bit of background on your shed. What do we need to know?
Well, it's not exactly my shed. It's my old man's shed, and I remember spending quite a bit of time in there as a kid.
Yep. Did you inherit that? Was it handed down?
No, he's still got it. He refuses to let go.
Does he?
I think it's going to be willed to someone, I don't know who.
Yep.
But my old man, he used to go, well, he still does, goes down to the local high school and jumps in the hoppers down there and he ferrets around and comes home with half a dozen calculators and they'll be laid out on the bench, you know, and... pieces and then he'll try and put them together to make one or two whole calculators.
Right. Now, Mark Thompson, that is this the kind of behaviour you're familiar with?
Well, that's principle one of shed science. Yes. Never throw anything out.
Right. A whole lot of busted calculators. And Mark on the phone, is he working on something? Is it all heading somewhere?
Well, you know, like, I mean, you've got the paint tins full of the old bent nails and stuff like, but they're going to come in damn useful one day.
And what about the rest of the family? Are they allowed in there?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Not at all. Not even at selected times. There's not a tour?
No. It's an all-male domain.
Right. Okay, well, I don't know if there's anything for the book there, Mark, but we're certainly in the right direction. And now we're going to talk to Mike. Are you there, Mike?
I am here.
Mike, we've got Mark Thompson with us here. Tell Mark about your shed.
Well, my shed's about 20 by about 12. Been building me bike in there for the last 5 years.
5 years, that's good. And what kind of progress have you made?
Well, I got it registered last year, but fortunately it breaks down on me once a week so we can wheel her back in there.
So it's an excuse to get back into the shed.
No worries. I've got a GT Capri parked down the back corner with about 4 inches of dust on it because I'm going to do it up.
Of course you are.
I got the obligatory dartboard, no problems there. Got the spotlight on it. Got an old Harley frame down the back corner.
Got me gym in there,
so I'll make a regular trip down there.
Gee, that's almost ready for national classification. Mark, are you impressed?
I am impressed.
I am the shed dweller. No one dwells in their shed more than I.
I wonder, how's the shed furniture, Mike? Have you got any of the broken chairs that you've fixed up?
I got the old folding chair by the door. When my girlfriend brings me down a cup of coffee, I just have to go to the door. I don't have to actually leave the shed. And from there, I can survey what it is I'm about to do next.
Yeah. And does she slip it under the door, or does she just bring it, knock, and then leave?
Well, sometimes she comes to the window and rings a bell to let me know it's ready.
And Mark, can I ask you, we're hearing about motorbikes and stuff like that. What's one of the more unusual projects you've come across being undergone in a shed in Australia?
Ooh, I'd have to think about that one for a little bit. I've come across a bloke with 75 motorbikes.
Oh, really?
In his shed, and not one of them works.
I had a mate, Mark, who spent a week in his shed and didn't come out, and I went down and knocked, still no answer, went in, and as I opened the door, there he was, strung up like the guy from A Man Called Horse. That's what he'd been doing for a week. I just shut the door and left him to it. I thought, well, how about your business? Your shed.
Compulsive shed behaviour. Trent, are you with us? Trent?
So I am.
What's going on in your shed, buddy?
Well, it's not actually my shed. I don't think my wife would let me have a shed because she wouldn't see me, but it's actually my wife's grandfather's shed.
Oh, what's that like?
Well, a couple of years back it burnt down. He's had to get a new shed. Now, the new shed's about half the size, but he does everything in there. He's not allowed in the house. He's got to live in the shed.
Oh, he actually lives in the shed?
He lives in the shed.
Would he sleep in it?
Well, he doesn't actually sleep, and he's loud enough to sleep, but once he wakes up, he's vanished to the shed for the day.
Right. Is it still a shed, Mark, if the occupant actually lives there?
Well, there's a bloke in Adelaide called Dr. Michael Lee, who's a family therapist, and in a sort of tongue-in-cheek way, he classifies sheds from benign to malignant. Right? And the malignant one is where you practically live in it.
Right. Well, I think we're looking at a shed that needs lancing.
And if you are going to sleep in a shed, Mark, is there a way you should go? Are we talking hammock? Are we talking, how permanent should the structure be you're sleeping in?
Well, yeah, I've seen a few that do like, people have actually obviously lived there, Then you need a stove, to keep warm at night. It just gets bigger and bigger in the oven,
And before you know it, it's kind of a house, really, isn't it? So it's not the same. Okay, I think we've just got time for one more caller. Are you there, Glenn?
Yes, I'm here.
Tell us your story from the shed, Glenn.
Well, there's a few things that you must have in your shed. And I think one important thing is, seeing as I have a handyman's dream, you might call my house.
Mm-hmm.
We got under the garage underneath the house, and we actually had to excavate out of the sandstone. So that I had my image of a garage, which involved somewhere I could walk around next to the car, not just pottering along the front of the car. I wanted to be able to walk next to it.
Oh, yeah.
So, we got a quite a large area there. And last birthday, no socks and undies for me. We're talking pegboard.
Now,
we do have pegboard. There's pegboard for the tools of the trade, the old Boilermaker welder tools of the trade.
Yep.
We've got a solid steel bench with a really oversized vice sitting on it. Good for crushing beer cans and bottle tops and stuff like that.
And how much square of pegboard are we talking, Glenn?
Oh, we're actually talking about 6 metres square.
Hell.
We had about 3 toolboxes of tools that, sure, they'll never use, but, geez, they look good on the wall.
And what have you done in the shed? What have you done? Have you worked on anything as yet?
Well, I'm trying to build a house.
In the shed?
I'll tell you what I did last week. I cleared out all the building material I saved as I was ripping rooms out, thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to use that. And right. I put that in one corner, but we've had to move that because I've ripped down a wall in the shed.
Right.
But we do have a gym, as another caller mentioned. Well, a skipping rope and a punching bag.
Oh, yes. Exactly.
Is a punching bag a good look in a shed, Mark?
Oh, absolutely. I saw a few of them, especially the ones that are kind of all sick looking and they're big bulges. Yeah,
just hanging from a chain.
Well, I'm not sure if what Glenn's describing is a shed or a bat cave. But that's fantastic, Glenn, and thanks for that. And Mark, what do you? If somebody wants to contribute to this book you're nutting out in your shed, how do they go about it?
Well, they write to me, Mark Thompson, P.O. Box 26, Hindmarsh, South Australia, 5007.
Right.
But they need to do it within the next 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. So get into your sheds.
Yeah.
Pens out.
Get scribbling.
All right. And, Mark, all the best with that book. And thanks for talking sheds with us today.
No worries. Big pleasure.
All right. And I think we can declare the shed conference, the National Shed Link-Up, at an end.
It was illuminating. A lot of good ideas came out of that.
And speaking
of a summit, a shed summit.
It certainly is. And we'll be having another one next year. And we're hoping to get Boutros Ghali and a few people like that in to oversee it. But right now at Martin Malloy,
it's time to play Beat the Beasley. Here's how it works. Mick and Tony have commissioned the nation's finest designers, engineers and craftsmen to construct several frighteningly lifelike replicas of federal opposition leader Kim Beazley. Every day on Martin Malloy, one of these enormous structures will be dropped onto something fragile, tiny or defenseless. That is, unless you can correctly answer 5 questions and beat the Beazley. If you're successful, you'll win a Sanyo Olympic Home Entertainment Package, including a Sanyo widescreen TV, Sports Review VCR, enough pizza and Coke to get you through the games, and a cleaner to come to your place and deal with the aftermath. Okay, lads, roll out the Beasley.
Happy to Pete Smith, and you know, it doesn't get much more tiny, fragile, or defenseless than Babe, lovable Babe, the talking pig who has snubbed the organisers of the AFI Awards. That's right, George Miller, the producer of Babe, has decided that he's not going to allow the film to be entered in for the AFIs. I don't know if it actually qualifies for the AFIs because haven't people been to see Babe?
I don't think they have. It's already been released.
That eliminates it from competition if last year's AFIs or anything to go by.
What are they thinking?
But we thought today, just out of spite, we'd drop the Beasley onto Babe. Because we're hoping to completely fill the studio with bacon by the end of the segment. And we require something heavy. What are we actually dropping onto Babe?
A rash of Brett Whiteley biographies.
Right. All of them inaccurate?
All of them inaccurate.
That's right. We've got
two or one.
One copy each of all the inaccurate biographies of Brett Whiteley. And we've sculpted them out in the shed with the assistance of Mark Thompson, into a giant Beasley. And we're going to drop it onto Babe unless you can successfully answer 5 trivia questions, bloody simple ones, in the space of a minute. Call us to beat the Beasley on 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by Apps.
Yes, that furious, zany jitterbug rhythm tells us it's time to beat the Beasley once again here at Martin Molloy. Here's what we've done today. We've constructed a Beasley from inaccurate biographies of the late artist Brett Whiteley. We're prepared to drop it on to, the only person to so far snub the AFI Awards this year, and that's Babe, the lovable piglet. And who's going to prevent that from happening? Hopefully, Mickey.
It's Maxine. Hello, Maxine. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Now tell us a bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
Who am I? I'm Maxine. I'm a property manager for the professionals in Brunswick down in Melbourne.
In Melbourne.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that means you let them have the key and you go get it back here in an hour.
That's
the kind of thing.
That's right.
What's the biggest property you've ever dealt with?
I've got one at the moment, actually. It's $500 a week in Royal Parade, Parkville.
Oh, really? All right, then. You got your plug in? Lovely.
Nicely done. Now, Maxine, do you follow the work of Babe? Are you a big fan of the Pig movie?
Yeah, I saw the previews, but I didn't actually see the movie.
Oh, okay. So you're not going to mind too much if it falls, if the Beasley falls onto Babe?
No, not really.
Now, you can prevent that happening simply by answering 5 questions correctly in the space of a minute. Do you think you've got what it takes to beat the Beasley, Maxine?
Yes, I have.
All right, crane it into position, Gracie. And when you hear the gunshot, that means the questions will be coming at you. The gunshot, of course, being fired from a crimped gun. And here they come now. Any second. Whoa, and what was Babe's catchphrase, Maxine?
Pass.
Oh, it was la la la.
Name the odd man out. Brett Whiteley, Harpo Marx, a floor mop, the ball bloke off Murder One.
A floor mop.
Oh, yes, I suppose we can accept that, or the ball bloke off Murder One. What does John Howard wear when he addresses gun owners, Maxine?
Bulletproof jacket.
Yes. Correct. What would you like to see John Howard... What would you like to see John Howard wearing?
Nothing.
Yes, I can accept that.
I'm going to contest that.
Name the chemical symbol for lead.
Oh, God. OL2?
No. What should the chemical symbol for lead be?
L2.
Yeah. That'll do. Much more sensible than PB. Name one of the Sex Pistols living.
Sid Vicious.
No, it has to be alive.
We're moving
He's
on.
Alive in spirit.
Okay, name a TV show that's been turned into a... Oh, no.
We're completely covered in pork, Maxine. And I'm afraid you haven't got the Sanyo prize pack.
How did you get him?
Oh, well, it'll make a good pizza.
Oh, you got 3. And is there a Brown album and Martin Molloy t-shirt coming Maxine's way?
Oh, fantastic.
There you go, Maxine.
All right, thanks for playing Beat the Beasley. And we're sorry about that. We'll be back tomorrow. And hopefully it'll be beaten to within an inch of its life tomorrow here on Martin Molloy. Roachford, and bad luck to Maxine, because really, I just checked the tally. She got 4 questions right.
She
would have only have needed 1 more to have successfully beaten the Beasley.
Oh, well.
And scored the Olympic prize pack courtesy of our friends at Sanyo. Let me just...
beat the Beasley an Olympic event, is it?
I'd like to think that it will be.
Is that what it's all about? Is that the Olympic link with beat the Beasley?
I hope so, because I'd like to see that. Just 5 big Beasleys in the form of the Olympic rings. We'll get on the phone to Juan Antonio Samaranch and see what we can organise. But in the meantime, in case you weren't listening yesterday...
Good evening and welcome to the studios of Channel 9 for what promises to be a very serious 60 minutes debate on the issue of gun controls. And now here's your host, Richard Carlton. Guns and Australia. It's a hot potato. And tonight, we're going to attempt to peel it. But it won't be easy. We've got less than 20 minutes to engineer as many hysterical and simplistic outbursts as possible, whilst thoroughly clouding this most complex and sensitive of issues. So let's begin with some irrelevant bullshit in the next studio. Armourer, if you could please fire that bolt action 22. Armourer. Could you please fire that double-barreled shotgun? And now, Armourer, could you please fire whoever it was who decided to open this debate with a display of firepower clearly calculated to inflame the shooting victims scattered throughout our audience. What the...
Sorry, couldn't resist.
Give that gun back to the armourer, Mr. Drain, and return to your seat.
Sorry.
Right. If we could begin with some kind of emotive catchphrase. Anybody?
Yes, Richard. Could I just use the phrase, dealers in death?
Yes, I think we could accept that. Now, if we could go over to the other side, could I have an ill-researched and irrelevant statistic?
Yeah, listen, you got 10 times as much chance of being run down by a bus than you have of being shot in this country.
Fairly inflammatory. I'd suggest that deserves a round of incoherent catcalling. Do we have a Melbourne talkback radio personality with us?
Over here.
Well put. Ted Drain, would you like to say a few words before you're cut off by a hysterical Sydney journo and never referred to again?
Certainly. I think it's important to retain...
Listen, you've got to wake up yourself, pal. Yes, you. People like you.
Do we have a woman shouting meaningless statistics out of all context?
68%.
And where's the rather strident woman dressed like a man who we've only included to fire up the rednecks?
I'm here, Richard, and I've got some more contradictory statistics. 59%. That's right, boys. 59%.
Okay, now we're cooking. Time to introduce our token opportunistic right-wing nutcase.
Hi, Graham Campbell here.
Care to big note yourself for a few moments?
Love to, Richard. I've still got a bullet which I carry round with me after I personally overpowered 50 armed yahoos. No ninjas in my lounge.
Sorry, Graham. Just time for another statistic.
52%.
Another emotive catchphrase.
Violence on television.
A volley of shots from the armourer. And finally, someone who doesn't like the way the media are portraying gun owners as fools.
Yes, bloody right, Richard. And I just like to bloody say that we don't want them bloody military guns anyway, and they can go to buggery.
Well, sir, is this what you want? A pump-action shotgun?
Yeah.
And how much does a gun like this sell for on the black market?
Oh, about $2,000.
Is correct. And you can collect that on the way out. And I think we can stop now, as we've got enough sensationalist one-liners for the promo. So I'll ask you all to make your points, whatever they might be, simultaneously. Good night.
Listen here. Can I just
say, here with Let It Rain winding up today's Martin Malloy. We're looking up at the telly here in the studio. There's baby John Burgess. He's putting a brave face on. He's still playing out the rest of his contract there on Wheel of Fortune. Just turn the sound up, if you could, Mickey, and let's see if we can detect any change in his voice. A treasured addition to your library. Oh, that's not Burjo. That's who's ever up in the booth.
Burjo's out the back having a bit of a line-in.
Here he is.
The board game. They'll be giving him one of those soon.
Thanks for coming on the show today, baby John. Don't forget your board game.
Oh, well, there we go. You know, he's still keeping the chin up, but it's not the same, is it?
No.
And how about that new, I think it's National, the new Channel 7 Early News? Has that taken off? I see there's a review in the one of the Melbourne papers today from our old friend Robert Fidgen. And he's not very impressed, saying that it took almost 25 minutes before co-presenter Naomi Robson remembered how to smile.
Because it's important. It's very important when you're reading the news.
It says, as she presented the finance report. That's always a damn good cat, the old report. What's that Dow Jones up to?
Because you've got to turn the frown upside down if you're presenting the news.
Oh, yeah. You've
got to show the teeth. You've got to smile.
Yeah,
I think he's going to complain she wasn't turning letters or something.
Of course, as she presented the latest on Bosnia. Yeah, that's right. I never knew that smiling was a requirement. But what else have we got to mention? I should mention once again the Martin Malloy website. website on the big international internet or whatever you want to call it. I understand we had 1,000 visitors to the site on Friday night alone. Mm. So there.
And didn't they leave a mess? We don't mind you visiting the site, but clean up after you've left.
There were consonants and vowels everywhere. And I understand nobody was wearing the hard hats. You can wear the hard hats when you visit the site. And Pete Smith, give us the internet address. Pete's on the sneeze.
Pete's on the sneeze.
Pete, what is it?
http://martinmalloy.village.com.au.
Oh, I think you know what that means. I'm sure people know you know how to get there. Because, you know, nobody's fast enough to write that down.
Ask the directions. Hit your ride.
All right. And just before we go, what about the 310ers? Here's a bit of interesting trivia about them. I didn't know this, but insurance companies say that the 310ers, Pavarotti, Domingo and Carreras, aren't allowed to fly together in case of a plane crash.
Yeah. No, I think they're not allowed to fly together because they would cause a plane crash, Tone.
I think possibly so. But they have to be separated.
You've got to have a tenner on each plane.
That's right.
If I was in a plane crash, I'd want the 310ers on board. Because when it came round to eating somebody, you're going to pig out.
And, of course, as we know, Luciano Pavarotti can be used as a flotation device.
I don't think a plane could take off with the 310ers on it. It'd be dragging down the airstrip, and it'd get to the end of the strip, and it'd just keep going along the ground. It'd be on a highway. It'd be going for about 20 k's, fast as it can, just trying to get off the ground.
Out of the way, tenors on board. We're going to drive this bastard to Melbourne. But thanks to our guests today, Martin Malloy, Mark Thompson. Thank you to all our shed cases and gladiators. We'll be back tomorrow at the same time with, of course, Judith Lucy. And until then, remember, if you can't say something in intelligent, come talk to us.